Next up, I have the second episode of Cliff Goodwin, Fun Time with Cliff Goodwin. It's been a total pleasure getting into his head and hearing all these great stories. So this is the second episode. It's a series that will last about a dozen weeks. So it's about 10, 12 minutes each week. And I think it's just interesting as anything. So thanks, Cliff, for doing this with me. And here comes episode number two. I'm Gail Hunt, and I'm excited to bring you Fun Time with Cliff Goodwin, a rock and talk series of Cliff's Tales from the Road, a behind-the-scenes look at his rock and roll adventures, from his start in Worcester to 12 years with Joe Cocker and more, right here at WCUW. This week we'll hear from Cliff about chemistry for bands, the scene at the time, and the beginnings of Albatross.
Well, the magic of the Beatles, I mean, you as musicians, and certainly, you know, the importance of chemistry. You can't just throw four people together and expect chemistry. And with those guys, there was this amazing chemistry that was otherworldly. You know, it was the perfect alignment, man, putting a man on the moon. It's not, you know, it's not that simple. The simple guy will go, yeah, just go really fast and aim at that white thing in the sky.
Keep turning.
You know what I mean? And turn right when you get to it. Appleton's Journal.
Journey. Where did that name come from?
I got that name out of it was a publication, an old English publication that published a lot of Shakespeare's plays and sonnets. And it seemed like a cool name. And I don't know if it was, but that was the name of the band. That was after the end. See, you had in our previous episode, ladies and gentlemen, you had talked about Exit Left and the End.
Yeah.
Well, the end is the band I joined after Exit Left, which in itself is an interesting story because our singer that I alluded to in the previous episode, Carl Mahoney, said to me, their singer is quitting. I'm going to go audition, and do you want to come? And I went and came along for the audition, and it turns out when we got there, the singer wasn't quitting. The guitar player was quitting, Jimmy D'Angelo.
Oh my God.
Was quitting to go join the Joneses with his brother.
Oh, wow.
And I auditioned for the End and got the job. And that was the beginning of really understanding the End had gigs in Leominster and Fitchburg.
Ooh, taking it on the road.
Yeah. And to me, that was. I'm from Worcester. My family didn't own a car.
I walked to gigs.
Yeah, we didn't. My family didn't own a car. I mean, I was brought up in three-decker. This was, you know, we do a gig, we get a little pay packet that said what the gig paid, what the expenses that were taken out of, and what we made. This to me instilled the family that kind of backed the End was a name called Evans. And of course, the two sons in the band, Jimmy Evans and George Evans, were in the End with me. Yeah, George Evans, the famous pianist, and their family, Mr. and Mrs. Evans, were incredibly supportive. I can't even say to you how much they were supportive in my understanding of the music as a business and as it wasn't a hobby anymore. Mm. It wasn't a toss-off. Hence the fact that my grandmother and Fred D'Angelo came to an agreement on the 335, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
The engagements that my grandmother referred to that I was going to pay her back from were from the End, essentially. You know, we were in that for which seemed like years, but probably was months. I don't really know back then. You know, 6 months was forever. But that was really the beginning of understanding the concept of music as a business.
And then after that was the Appleton.
Then was Appleton's Journal. So the End kind of fizzled, and we started Appleton's Journal back with some guys from Exit Left again. So it was kind of back to where you. I'm at Doherty by now, sophomore. At Doherty and met the guys that we would originally start Albatross with. Paul Martin, Jerry Martin, and Michael Lynch were in a band called Lord Byron's Creation. And they went to Holy Name, but we saw them at a frat, another frat party. And if you took a break, you went across the street to see who was playing over across the street. They blew me away. They did Sweet Judy, Blue Eyes by Crosby, Stills, and Nash. And this was beyond anything that Appleton, little old Appleton's Journal could even muster.
Yeah.
So one thing leads to another. And I hooked up with Michael and Lynch and Jerry and Paul Martin and Jimmy Perry. And then we got a guy named John Bianchi on organ. And that was the original Albatross.
Wow.
Named by John, I believe.
John Bianchi.
Yeah. Yeah. And then, of course, we played. Back then, there were two gigs, two kinds of gigs. There was frat parties and high school dances. And we did that for, got to be a year, maybe. Because it's difficult to know back then when you're so young.
And so clubs weren't as relevant then, or?
Well, I don't think we were old enough to play clubs.
Okay, there you go.
Somehow we could get by playing frat parties because maybe they weren't a legitimate nightclub.
Sure.
You know, there were some local, during the years of Exit Left, there was a place called the Comic Strip down at Lincoln Square where we got to see the New Breed, which was, you know, Lee Vachon and Paul LaRange, Frank Sebastiano, Paul Secco, and Mighty Gentilly. And then, of course, they were, you know, the holy grail of local bands, the New Breed and the Joneses at the time. But the New Breed were the house band, the Comic Strip. And that was, again, just down the street from where I lived on Institute Road. I could, you know, walk down. And Exit Left played, I think, maybe one or two times opening for the New Breed at the Comic Strip. But there were a few teenage, what they called teenage nightclubs, you know.
Sure.
Hullabaloo came and went up in the northern county, up in Ayer, I think, to Hullabaloo. But the general... Your general itinerary was high school dances, of which, you know, there were nothing but high schools. And everybody, this is before DJ, so it was every time they had anything, it was a dance with a band.
Yeah, nice.
And frat parties. You know, we eventually went over to do some frat parties at Clark, but there were more frat parties at fraternities at WPI. Mm-hmm. And, of course, it was proximate, you know, location-wise.
And how did this roll into the band American Standard, and where'd you get the name?
Well, it's pretty American standard. Who would name a band after a plumbing company? Good
I know.
Lord,
you that's what I was going to ask. Who did? You?
Access Toto.
Right.
The biggest plumbing company in Japan, by the way, folks. Yeah. No, American Standard came about, for me, it was already functioning. It was a guy named Kevin Falvey and a guy named Bob Monroe and Jimmy Evans, not George yet. I think there was another guy in the band, but I can't remember his name. I apologize for that. But back, let's back take two steps back. Albatross kind of went as far as it could go because of a number of things. Jerry, Paul Martin's brother, Jerry Martin, quit. And when he quit, to me, the vision of Albatross really faded because he was the third voice in a lot of those harmonies. Jerry was... and is still an incredible musician. He's the MD for Decades by Design. It kind of, I went, oh, wow, okay. And at the same time, Kevin Falvey saw us and asked me to join American Standard. Well, I joined because Albatross, in my mind, the vision of Albatross wasn't what I really wanted. Mm. And I remember like 6 months later, it really, 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 really pissed me off because Jerry rejoined. Albatross.
So,
but I was already an American Standard, so you don't go back. I mean, back then, you know, nobody... Back then, it was treasonous to play with another band. You know, now I play with, you know, four or five bands, and you know, that's everybody does a bunch of things.
Yeah.
Back then, if you did one thing, you didn't do another. Huh. You didn't even jam with anybody else.
You were a gang.
It was, yeah, pretty much. That's one way to look at it. So that's American Standard. And I think at one time, we got a notification from the clubbing company to cease and desist.
No.
So then we changed it to the American Standard
Band. That's
great
publicity.
You flushed it.
We were, but because originally it was American Standard.
Who is the first band you recorded with or did a record or?
Well, the first band I recorded with, strangely enough, was Exit Left. We did a acetate recording down on Shrewsbury Street for a guy named Fred Holovnia.
Oh yeah.
And but he had this place called Northeast Recording. And we did two songs. One was a Barry and the Remains tune called Why Do I Cry? Mm-hmm. And the other was a Rascals tune called Ain't Gonna Eat Up My Heart Anymore. Mm-hmm. And that was Exit Left Street. That was the first recording, but it was really primitive, you know.
Do you still have it, or is it?
I think I do, yeah. But I can't put my hands on it right now. But it was an acetate. I don't know what you back then. You know, it went right to disc. So you only had so many plays, and it had no longevity. It wasn't vinyl. It was of a kind of a. Anyway, they called it an acetate. That was pretty much the extent of recording. We started playing. Again, we're in Worcester, Massachusetts, folks. So there's only, you know, you had a vision of what you wanted to do, but you really had no way to get there because you had to play Leominster High School this weekend. You know what I mean? There was a minor focus on original material, which started when American Standard started. Kevin Falvey started to think about writing. Then we started doing original material. And of course, American Standard, that version of American Standard, we'll call it Mach 1, which was Jimmy Evans, John Whitty, Bob Monroe, Kevin Falvey, George Evans, and me. We did a demo out at a place called Shaggy Dog Studios in Western Mass, out in Stockbridge, out around there. Again, but as I've said many times, we're from Worcester. The guys in New York that really could sign a check or sign you, they're not coming to Worcester. The proof of the pudding, let's put American Standard aside for a minute. Back then, you had the Joneses. You had Zonkeraz. You had Albatross. Those were the three bands that come to mind in addition to American Standard. There was absolutely no reason why all those four bands, shouldn't have, American Standard finally did, but those other three bands, there's no reason why they shouldn't have been signed. Absolutely. If you were in the UK, they would have been signed. Now, been a hit? Who knows? But at least they would have had their shot.
Yeah, no, that's interesting.
They would have had their shot, and they deserved it. And this is just Worcester.
Yeah.
So America had so many bands that were worthy, with a capital W, that never got heard and never got signed. There just wasn't enough A&R guys to come out of the big cities to find you. And there were more scammers than you could imagine. You know, it was always you always found out about a guy who knew a guy who knew a guy that worked for Elektra Records. And then you went and tried to do a showcase, you know what I mean? Or you went and tried to play for him or whatever. It was pretty weird.
Yeah, it was hard. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. It really, really was.
I'd like to thank Cliff Goodwin for this fun time episode. We look forward to hearing more next week. Tune in to The Drive at 5 and for our Rock and Talk series around 6 p.m.